I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 21st, 2016. We're here in Juneau for our hearing today. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present: Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stoltz, Senator Coghill, Senator Wilkowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. I expect Senator Michicki to be joining us soon. Senator Stedman is excused today. Thanks to Ann and Matt, who are helping us out today on the audio and keeping records of the meeting. We have two items on the agenda today. First of all, the hearing of the appointment of Israel Payton to the Board of Fisheries, and following that, we'll take up House Bill 100. So we'll begin with Mr. Payton's confirmation. He's online, and committee members will find in their packets the Board and Commission fact sheet, which is very informative. So you can kind of look that over if any questions about the responsibilities. So let's see, Mr. Payton is online. Welcome, Mr. Payton.
Thank you, Senator Giesel.
So, Mr. Payton, if you could state your name for the record and let the committee know why you wish to serve on the Board of Fish and what experience you might bring to that job. But before you begin, I want to welcome Senator Michicki. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Mr. Payton, I'll let you begin.
All right. Thank you. And thanks this committee for being so accommodating to my schedule. I took the family out of state for a vacation and I'm back now. For the record, my name is Israel Payton. I'm 37 years old. And I'd like to basically just say who I am, why I want to be a board member, and what I think a good board member should be and do, if that's okay with you guys.
That'd be perfect.
All right, I'm 37 years old. I am a lifelong Alaskan and was home birthed in a 12 by 12 trapper's cabin at the base of the Alaska Range on the Hayes River. I was weighed on a Zebco fishing scale, coming in at 8 pounds. My parents raised me and my three younger siblings in a remote community of Squintna, and we lived a subsistence way of life. I was taught only to take what you need and never waste anything. Until recently, I was a member of the Matsu Fish and Game Advisory Committee and have been an active participant in the Board of Fish, Board of Game, the Joint Board, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the Dall Sheep Working Group, and many various other fish and game meetings. I have good relationships with other advisory committees, Alaska Department of Fish and Game staff, and managers, and other board members. I've actively participated in many different fisheries and regions of Alaska, including guided, sport, personal use, and subsistence. I have familiarity in South Central, in Kenai and Matsu, Bristol Bay, and the Alaska Peninsula areas. I've worked as a sport fishing guide in the past, but it has been 11 years since I've made any money related to any type of fisheries resource, and it does not define who I am or how I will vote. Although my perspective and familiarity of commercial fisheries is not as strong, I'm very aware that we make an effort to become familiar with them and reach out to all users of that industry. I believe in some ways that this will be beneficial to commercial fisheries, as I do not bring preconceived ideas or conflicts between different commercial users or fisheries. I definitely understand the commercial economic value of nearly $6 billion a year and what it means to the state, its communities, and its families. I believe Alaska should always be the leader in sustainable wild fisheries. Basically, why do I want to be a board member? A lot of people have asked that when they heard that I got on the board, and they have given me a lot of condolences. But from a very early age, I remember being drugged to advisory committee meetings, Board of Fish meetings, and to the Alaska Department Fish and Game Office, now which I do to my daughter, and she gets bored very often. But growing up in a remote community, I was taught that being involved in fish and game issues is part of one's civic duty and how to give back to the community. I have served for years on an advisory committee to the Board of Fish and Game, and that has been a very rewarding experience. And someday I hope to pass that on and my daughter will participate in some way. The fish and game process is very unique. The regulation process is very unique and special to Alaska. It allows any individual to submit a proposed regulation, be vetted in a public process, and ultimately put into a regulation book. basically the people of Alaska make their own regulations. I believe very strongly in this process and want to see it improved upon and continue for generations. I'll kind of go over some of my thoughts on what I think a good board member should be and do. I think they should be fair and impartial with no personal agenda. Be an active, involved participant in the board with a good understanding of the issues at hand. Try to get boots on the ground on the different areas in the state and see the fisheries and basically a first-hand knowledge with the people in the fisheries. Reach out to all users and build strong relationships, but be careful not to be perceived as any one user's advocate. Building trust with all users is key, and being open and accessible is very key to this process. Use all available resources, like the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, science, testimony, longevity, local knowledge. Use all the resources available to make the best decision at the time. Be an advocate of the process and encourage others to be involved as well. I firmly believe in the process, and I believe encouraging others is really key to keep it going. Realize that board members do not represent a specific interest group, fishery, or industry, but represent all Alaskans equal, and we all have very different, unique perspectives. And once again, the main goal is to conserve and develop the fisheries and resources for the state, and always remember statute and constitution when it comes to that. I would be lying if I didn't say I was not nervous about serving on this board, and I'll tell you right now, I don't have all the answers, nor do I know all the issues and all the fisheries across the state. But at the same time, I'm very excited to be appointed, and I'm a hard worker and a fast study. I caught my first king salmon when I was 9 years old and still remember it like it was yesterday. I can tell you the make and model of the reel, the pound line I was using, what I was using for bait, my lure. It is a very core memory. I want to make sure every Alaskan child can have a core memory like that, whether it be using a dip net, rod and reel, or their first commercially harvested fish. Having these resources available for the next generation is at the core of my beliefs, and I think my unique Alaskan upbringing will serve the Board of Fish well and Alaska well as well. Basically, fish and game issues are in my blood. It is something I cannot help or contest. It is who I am, and I'd be very honored and humbled for your trust and vote for my confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Payton. I'm going to ask committee members if they have any questions for you. Any questions? All right.
I have a couple.
All right, Senator Machicki.
We might be playing a waiting game, but...
Well, we can go to public comment, too. I got some folks that want to make comment, but
okay.
We actually, can also... Do you want to wait till after? Okay. All right, so let's take some public comments. So I've got three folks online who wish to comment on this appointment. So I'll start in... Make that four people. So I'll start in the Matsu. Birch, I think it's Eukins? Mr. Eukins, can you hear us?
Yes, ma'am. It's Eukins, Birch Eukins. Thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Yes, if you would identify yourself for the record, your affiliations, and then give us your testimony.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Birch Eukins. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, minus some time out for higher education. Currently, I'm on the Matsu Fish and Game Advisory Committee, but I'm here speaking for myself. I don't hold any commercial fishing licenses. I commercial fish to help pay for college, sport fish a lot around the state. And now for my comments. Again, thank you for allowing me to speak today. I've worked with Mr. Payton over the last year on the Matsu AC. He is always willing to listen to all user groups. He is very knowledgeable, does his homework, and works hard. I feel he would be a great addition to the Board of Fish. I'm being short and sweet here, so thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Eukins. Any questions for Mr. Eukins? All right. Seeing none, next I'll go to the Homer LIO. Wes Humbard is there. Wes, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm there. My name is Wes Humbert. I've been a resident of Alaska since 1971. And I would like to first start out by letting some of the people that take the oath of office, they swear to uphold the Constitution and the statutes of whatever are laid down in the different sections. And The statutes on the Board of Fish Appointees say absolutely nothing about designated seats, but call for appointees that have knowledge, integrity, and sense of duty. Under Section 16.05.221, Board of Fishers and Game, the appointed member shall be residents of the state and shall be appointed without regard to political affiliation or geographical location of the resident. And I wish somebody on this board would have asked Mr. Payton what his feelings were about the allocation corridor in the middle of Cook Inlet. They call it the conservation corridor. It was an allocation corridor. And I wish somebody on that board up there would ask him what his feelings are about that. And I'm not going to say yay or nay on Mr. Payton yet. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you very much for your comments, Wes. Next, also in Homer, is Chris Gordon. Mr. Gordon?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Chris Gordon. I live in Homer. I've known Israel for a number of years. I am a guide, and I am also a commercial fisherman, and I spend most of my year working in the marine trades, building seine nets for the commercial fleet down here in Homer. I've always known Israel to be a thoughtful and intelligent and fair-minded person. I would hope that the committee would support his nomination. Thank you.
Thanks very much for your comments, Chris. Next, I'll go to Wasilla, the Wasilla LIO, and Stephen Bartelli is there. Stephen?
Yes, good afternoon, Senator Giesel and other esteemed members, including my representative, Bill Stoltz. My name is Stephen Bartelli, and I'm calling to recommend the confirmation of Israel Payton to the Alaska Board of Fish. I have known Israel for about 7 years now. We were elected at the same time to the Mat Valley Fish and Game Advisory Committee here in Wasilla, and I've served together on that committee ever since then and become good friends in the process. I think if I were to outline what characteristics I believe the state of Alaska should be looking for in a candidate for the Board of Fish, I would include four important traits: a thorough knowledge of the proposal process, a knowledge of the resource, a balanced approach of protecting the resource and managing that resource for maximum sustainable yield for all user groups, and using this expertise to become intuitive to the unintended consequences of some proposals. Through the years on our advisory committee, it became obvious to myself and others on the committee that Israel possesses all of these admirable qualities. As a matter of fact, he excels in all of them. As an AC member, I have had the luxury of voting out of principle, trying to think of how the folks that elected me would want me to vote. Israel has always had a broader perspective and a more even hand at how he participates, always considering all groups involved. He is articulate and able to convey his ideas in a compelling manner, but not too bad to change his mind if other compelling evidence to the contrary is presented. In short, I believe Israel is the perfect candidate for this position, and I urge this body to confirm his appointment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Any questions for Stephen? All right, seeing none. Is there anyone here in the room that wishes to testify on Mr. Payton's appointment? All right, seeing none. I have no one else online to testify, so I'll close public testimony. So back to the committee. Questions for Mr. Payton. Senator Machicki, did you have some?
I have a couple. Thank you, Mr. Payton, for applying or allowing yourself to be appointed. I respect anyone who puts their name up for this. And there's a couple things you wrote that I really like. One of them is recognition that in no other state can a single individual have so much impact on passing fish and game regulations. So obviously you understand the responsibility, but I also like that you said that you're constantly trying to recruit other young Alaskans in the process. I think one of the keys of Board of Fish success is getting much more people involved in understanding that process. And you know, I have one thing I want to say, and then I have a question for you. Actually, I have a question for you first, and that is, we've asked everyone this. You know the pressure that comes on you in the Board of Fish. You've been involved in the AC process when it's time to harvest opportunities for any of the four user groups in order to meet an MSY requirement. Do you have any hesitation on doing that in recognition of that enormous amount of pressure that you're going to face?
I couldn't hear you real clearly. Basically, you say would I hesitate in closing one of the four user groups fisheries? Is that what you said? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you very well.
Well, the question was, do you have any hesitation, understanding an enormous amount of pressure you'll be under? Do you have any hesitation on limiting harvest opportunities for any or all of the four user groups to meet the MSY requirement?
No, if there's a biological concern and there's a resource in crisis, or it's not meeting the, you know, the maximum sustained yield, I think, you know, that is time to act accordingly based on all of your available information. I realize the amount of pressure that commissioners and managers currently face when they do things like emergency orders and all that, but we are mandated by the statute, set by the legislature, and we have to follow it.
Follow-up, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a follow-up. Mr. Payton, I just have to say initially, you know, we're in a world of preconceived notions about people, and everyone that I know that had a concern about you that bothered to pick up the telephone and call you has been very impressed on your balanced approach, so I commend you on that. And then just finally, just to check you on your earlier testimony, what was your first reel on that king? Was it an ambassador?
No, it was actually a Zebco 33 Classic, believe it or not.
No further questions.
All right, thank you. Further questions for Mr. Payton? Mr. Payton, I'm not seeing any further questions for you. So, great job. So, at this point, I'm going to read the document while Ike passes around the signature sheet. In accordance with AS 3905080, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointment be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Board of Fisheries, Israel Payton, Wasilla, appointed 7-1-2016, term expires 6-30-2019. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions. So with that, Mr. Payton, we're going to sign this document, and thank you very much for joining us today. We'll take a brief.
Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. We'll take a brief at ease to complete the signatures. We're back on the record. So, continuing on with our agenda today, we're now going to take up House Bill 100. House Bill 100 was last heard on March 2nd. Public testimony was taken up at that time and left open. Let me turn to my fancy gizmo here and see if there's any folks online who want to testify. No. No one online who wishes to testify. Mr. Alper from the Department of Revenue is present in the room, and I am going to call him forward here in just a moment. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to deliver public testimony on House Bill 100? Seeing no one, we'll close public testimony. So, Mr. Alper, would you mind, thank you for coming forward. So, we heard the bill before, and I just wondered if you would be willing to let us know, does the administration support the bill? What are your feelings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Ken Alper. I am the Director of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. So far as I know, the administration does not have a position pro or con on the bill. I'm happy to speak to it. The bill has a lot of things going for it, frankly, that might help with our other efforts in trying to fix some of the things going on in Cook Inlet predominantly. One of the pros I see in this bill is that there is no cost to the state unless the project moves forward. You know, unlike many of our other tax credits, it's not tied to the expenditure, it's tied to the completion of the project, and then the project itself purchasing gas that's produced from an Alaska lease. That producer would then be paying royalties to the state, and the amount of that royalty would be what determines the tax credit that the owner of the facility, and most likely Agrium, would be eligible for. What we learned in hearings on other legislation is one of the big problems in Cook Inlet is supply. People who want to produce gas don't have secure markets. And a project like this would provide a tremendous new market for gas production in Cook Inlet, which might resolve some of those concerns over whether to make the investment in expanding production capacity.
Very good. Questions, committee members, for Mr. Alper? Yes, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was watching some of the previous proceedings on House Bill 247, the tax credit bill, and you said you couldn't offer, didn't have a position because your policymakers were out of town, but you proceeded to offer your own opinions. How would you, is that what you're doing today, or are these administration opinions? You've quite elaborated quite a while on your own opinions, and I just want to know how we take this testimony.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, once again, I have not spoken to the governor about this bill, which is known informally as the Agrium Bill, which probably isn't fair, House Bill 100. In my own opinion, were this bill to pass, it could provide some certainty for the Cook Inlet market. And frankly, as we look through the bill that you referenced, Senator Stoltz, through the chair, House Bill 247, if there was more certainty over having the ability to sell gas, we might not need to quite provide the same level of credit support for some of these marginal projects because they know that they could make the investment, invest in the platforms and so forth because they know they'd have a market through this Agrium facility to buy the gas.
Thank you.
Further questions for Director Alper? Senator Wilkowski.
I don't know if you listened in on the last hearing that we had where I asked Agrium about the tax credits and the impacts. And I asked them if they supported or rather opposed the taking away of tax credits in Cook Inlet. And they said, the tax credits in Cook Inlet were critical for this project to go forward. Do you disagree with that testimony?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'm trying in my head on the fly here to link the two in my head. If the gentleman from Agrium, what they testified to is that this is a $250 or so million capital project for them. If they're going to do this, that's an investment they're going to make, and then they're going to be needing to buy a large amount of gas. About 24 billion feet per year is the number that I have in my head. I think that's what's in the fiscal note. The people that would be producing that gas, if what Mr. Meyer testified to on the House Bill 247 hearings was, Janik Meyer, that the biggest uncertainty for the producer is if you have to build something new and big and can't drill all the wells you need to as fast as you want, that's where the economics of the project start turning upside down. If you can drill as many wells as you need to make the project pencil out, the underlying economics, the cost of gas in Cook Inlet, should support the project on its own merits. So I guess I would not agree that the current tax credit regime would be needed, but I don't see where it's necessarily relevant to the legislation before us right now.
Further questions for Director Alper about Senate Bill 100, or excuse me, House Bill 100? Senator Michiki.
Director Alper, you stated that this was at no cost to the state, but isn't it true that it's only potential significant earnings for the state if this exemption or tax credit, however you want to define it, is put into place?
So, through the chair, Senator Michiki, as I understand the bill's construction, and I think I have this right, the credit would be against the corporate income tax for the owner of the facility once it's in operation. So it would mean that the investment would have to have been made and they would have to be buying gas from an Alaskan lease. In other words, it's someone that's paying royalty to the gas. So the absolute upside of the tax credit would be the amount of royalty the state was receiving from the gas that was being credited against. So we've estimated, we're really the consultant brought in by Agrium has estimated, and we take them at their word, that the total amount of gas, given certain assumptions about the price of gas and all that, they would bring in about $15 million a year in royalty payments to the state. Therefore, the tax credit for this could not exceed roughly that $15 million a year. And then, based on some modeling of what Agrium's corporate income tax liability might look like, it's estimated to be in the $3 to $4 million range. So we would not be cashing them out at 15, we would simply be crediting back the entire four. The way the bill is written, this is not a credit that can be cashed, it's not a credit that could be rolled forward into a subsequent year. All you could do is reduce your corporate income tax liability in the current year to zero and not beyond that. And Mr. Chairman, before, I noticed an error of my own. I did write this fiscal note, and on the narrative part at the very end there, it says that the tax credit sunsets after calendar year 2026. That should say 2023. That's the way it's written into the bill. I just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you very much for that correction. Any further questions for Director Alper? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
So you, in the fiscal note, it says, assuming a corporate income tax rate of 9.4%, would the tax rate in fact be 9.4%, or would they be eligible for any other tax credits or worldwide apportionment?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, that 9.4% is the nominal tax rate for income above the, it's in the top bracket, it's $200,000+ a year. I don't remember exactly what the number is. I don't have a good sense of Agrium's worldwide or North American business model. I don't know how many other states they operate in. That work was done by McDowell Group, who modeled their economics and came up with this estimate of $3 to $4 million. We have not remodeled it or estimated it, so I'm not in a position to assume what they actually would be paying, although based upon discussions among our own staff, it seemed like as reasonable an estimate as any.
Further questions for Director Alper?
Can I just have a follow-up? Matt?
Yes, Senator Machiki.
So essentially, on that, the reason I asked that question is about the cost of the state. According to your fiscal note, the Agrium plant will utilize a single production train and consume approximately 28 BCF per year of gas, with 21 BCF coming from a state lease. If you assume a wellhead value of $5.70, total royalty payment to the state would be $14.96 million per year. If you subtract the 3 to 4, you're looking at 13 to 16 per year coming in for the first 6.5 years, and then this would sunset, and you would move to that $15 to $16 million range of revenue to the state. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Senator Machiki, yes, that's how I read it as well.
Okay.
Good. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. I asked at the last hearing about the financials, rate of return, net present value. I haven't seen any of that information presented yet. Do you have any of that information on the financials? I guess the thing we're always trying to figure out in tax credits is whether or not the company actually needs them. And have you done any sort of assessment whether or not what sort of rate of return this would provide before and after, rather with or without?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, we have not modeled this project at all. That's not something we've undertaken at the Department of Revenue. This is in many ways different than a lot of the other tax credits in place, simply because they're not cashable at the spend level. Now, the economics would be very different if, let's say, if we were paying 20, 30, 40% of Agrium's expenses as they were incurring them on a yearly basis. That would be much larger numbers and much different timing. The state's cost in this would be nothing until they actually completed the project and began operations. I frankly don't know if this tax credit, which order of magnitude-wise isn't that big, $3 or $4 million a year, is going to be the final tipping point to make that project pencil out. I appreciate their involvement in the project. The gentlemen from Agrium have been very informative when I've spoken to them. But order of magnitude, it's not that big a credit compared to the scale of the project. So I don't know the extent to which it's going to move the needle for them at all.
Further questions for Director Alper? Seeing none, thank you very much, Director Alper, for being available today. Thank you. Are there other questions? Would committee members like to speak to the gentleman from Agrium? We also have the bill sponsor here. Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, I asked at the last hearing if we could get some financial information about net present values, rates of return, and
we can certainly invite them forward. I did have staff forward you their fiscal documents today. But, gentlemen, can you step forward and offer some information? Looks like he has it in hand. Welcome.
Thank you.
It'd be you could put yourself back on the record, and you've heard Senator Wilkowski's question, if you could answer it.
I'm Steve Wynn. I'm the manager currently at Kenai Nitrogen Operations Facility.
And Adam Diamond, Manager of Government Relations for Agri.
So in answer to your question, Senator, through the chair, we did provide the chair person with financial information that I think was distributed today. We don't, as far as modeling goes, our ROI or net present value, those we keep close to the vest, as our business is different than oil and gas, for example, that you know, is a lot more publicly shared. There's just real competitive advantage to that information, so we're not able to provide that.
Senator Wilkowski, follow-up.
Yeah, thank you. It sort of makes it a little bit challenging for me and other legislators, potentially giving up $3 to $4 million a year, maybe more, without knowing whether or not you need the money. I mean, I guess we could have any corp company come in here and say, hey, we want to come to Alaska, give us some tax breaks. And I think what any rational, reasonable business person would do is to say, okay, let me see what your books show. Could I sign a confidentiality agreement and see the books in that case, see the numbers, the net present value, the rate of return?
Senator, through the chair, I could discuss that with corporate. If you were willing to do that, you know, on a one-on-one basis, I think we could consider that. What I would like to do is correct the record. The $15 million, there would not be $15 million, in our opinion, minus the $3 or $4 million. The state would still retain $15 million. We would just not pay the additional $3 or $4 million. So once the bill sunsets, the state would then be taking in $18 or $19 million, not $15 million.
Right. This is Adam Diamond. Just to clarify, under the bill, the royalty revenue to the state never goes down. There's never a subtraction against it. That was just used as a point to ensure the state would never be revenue negative. The state always receives, for the entire life of this bill, the state always receives the entire royalty revenue it's due. It's only the amount of corporate tax on top of it that is eligible for a limited abatement.
Thank you. That is an important clarification. Thank you.
Additionally, Senator, through the chair, you know, this will be the highest price gas that Agrium would purchase. By, in some cases, more than three times. NYMEX price today is $1.82. You know, our estimate of $5.70, I can tell you, is very conservative. You know, the commodity market, we've discussed that with you in our last testimony. In January, our product, our primary product, urea, hit the lowest point that it's been at in over 10 years. So this project is very challenged, and our ROI, just speaking in general terms, you know, is not 30% or, you know, that kind of thing that the oil companies are looking at. We usually are looking at 10 to 15% ROI. And I can tell you at that, this project is very challenged. So hopefully that gives you, you know, the information that you need. But it's not a slam dunk that this project is going to go. That's why originally we had planned to be up and running this year. But with the slow development of gas and the decline in commodity prices, it's made it that much tougher for us. And so we've had to look at other options and continue to work it to make it something that can compete against other internal projects within Agrium that the board would consider. At this point, we're not putting it forward to the board. And the $3 or $4 million that we would get is significant in many ways, not just financially, but also just as an important piece to know that the state of Alaska is behind the project. So, thank you.
Further questions? Yes, Senator Stolt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, gentlemen.
Last time this Enagrian bill was up, probably about 10, 11, 12 years ago, there was a lot of testimony involvement for the agriculture community, and I don't see any of that now. I remember the impact when Agrium closed. It was, I think, quadrupling is a modest assessment of how much fertilizer went up. I think it was up 5-6 times, if you could find it in volume. Have you outreached to the agriculture community? Because that's, I would have expected to have heard from that group, the Farm Bureau, and my friends in Delta, my friends in the Valley. Why isn't there anything in here about that?
Senator, through the chair, yes, we have talked to the Farm Bureau as well as Delta Salcha Conservation District, and both, I think, have submitted letters that are on the website attached to the bill in support of this, and we can certainly call on them to provide additional support if that's what's needed.
Thank you. Further questions, Senator Stolt?
I do. In tax policy, this seems to meet one of the tests that even the opponents of past tax policy, we give you a break when you have production. This seems to be give us a break after we've shown performance. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yes, Senator, through the chair. Yes, sir, I would agree with that. And also, just, you know, the company has, to keep this plant in, you know, repairable condition or restartable condition, whatever the right word would be there, you know, they put in a lot of money all along, and so they've got more than the $275 million invested in this just to keep the small staff and the plant going for this long, hoping for an opportunity, I think is significant.
Yeah.
Follow-up, Senator Stolt?
Yeah, thanks, and I'm told that there are support from the House version on I didn't look in the bowels of the internet. I'm sorry,
we're happy to have them resubmit it for you.
That was the mantra on a lot of our previous TAC debates on 110 and then 21. Show us the production before, and I guess it's just an observation. That's unless I'm totally missing something that. And I guess I might even want the department to reaffirm that, just as it seems. That seems to be my observation. But if we have a chance to have the department just come up and just clarify that.
Which department, please?
The department that was up prior.
Revenue.
Revenue.
Oh, okay.
Just whenever it fits into your.
Sure.
Your schedule.
We'll finish talking to these gentlemen. You know, I'll just comment. There are. Three things that I look at. This is a policy decision, so how will the policy affect Alaska families, Alaska businesses, and Alaska jobs? And so I'm just looking at information we've been presented, 300 to 600 jobs during reconstruction or renovation of the plant. Then you've said 140 jobs of operational. In the assessment, in the analysis, it says the average wage is $104,000 a year at the facility, compared to the average wage in the area of only $42,000 a year. So it meets all three of the thresholds in my policy decision-making criteria. Senator Matricki, you had a further question or comment?
Well, I do. It's interesting, like with the Cook Inlet Recovery Act, with all the credits and the removal of a production tax, folks that supported it were primarily focused on supply, which is a pretty narrow gauge. Important, but much narrower than this. And obviously my point earlier was just to, it's not that it's just doesn't have a cost to the state. There's no potential for it to not have a significant net positive to the state. And that's aside from the employment and the trickle down and all the other things that happen in my community. But I'm going to talk a little bit about operationally, 28 BCF per annum is about 82 million standard cubic feet a day. Is that right?
Senator, through the chair, yeah, 80 million cubic feet a day is what we'd be looking for.
Okay. The question I have is, does you invest in refurbishing the plant and you decide to fire up? Could you explain how Agrium functions for folks that don't know? I mean, you don't operate when you're in one train. It's either operating or not. You don't operate at 35. You're gonna likely operate at 80. If you're 6 months into this contract and decide, you know, perhaps the commodity price bottom falls out and you cease operation, what happens with this $3 to $4 million corporate tax exemption?
Senator, through the chair, this is Adam Diamond speaking. Under that scenario, and the reason this bill was tied to the royalty payments is, as Revenue testified earlier, the tax is only eligible up to the point of royalty revenue. So if, let's say, in 6 months, we've generated $2 million, I'm just pulling numbers, hypothetical numbers, we generate $2 million in royalty revenue to the state, our incentive in that year could never exceed $2 million regardless of what our income tax is for the year. And that's how the bill makes sure that it's revenue positive for the state. I hope that answers your question.
Follow-up, Senator.
Well, it does. I'm just illustrating the difference between other tax credits. I mean, there's no potential downside in this particular bill. So I appreciate that, Madam Chair.
Further questions for Agrium folks? Seeing none, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Senator Stoltz had an additional question for Director Alper, so if he could come forward once more. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, again, Ken Alper, Director of Tax Division, Department of Revenue, and I'd appreciate it if Senator Stoltz could repeat his question.
Absolutely. Senator Stoltz.
I'd appreciate it if I could remember my question.
Oh, dear.
No, the gist of my...
Maybe off the hook.
No. The gist of my question, Madam Chair, was I just wanted to clarify. Many of the opponents of previous tax iterations had the Missouri stat, you know, show us first and then get the tax breaks. Does this meet that test that even you and other critics have set in the past?
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, this is an excellent example of the type of tax credit where the state's cost is limited, if not negligible, before someone shows us something, before we see the production, absolutely. In many ways, part of the reason, and you referenced other legislation, we're seeking some changes in the Cook Inlet is...
I just asked you about this one.
Okay. I won't.
I don't want to tax you too much.
All right. Any further questions? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Do you know if Janik and Mike, Analytica, Janik and Nico, sorry, have done any sort of analysis on this and the potential impacts to Cook Inlet gas production?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, what Janik and Meyer and Nikos Tsafos, might as well get their names on the record, the legislature's consultants for oil and gas matters, looked at was not so much specific projects, but they did some modeling of stylized potential Cook Inlet developments and how they might be impacted by different changes in the tax credit system. I made a little reference to this earlier. The problem with Cook Inlet in some ways is, you know, right now the gas prices there are some of the highest in the country. As others have testified to, there's $2 gas or less elsewhere, and the market price is supporting 6, 7, even higher gas prices. So the projects under normal circumstances should pencil out on their own. The real problem is the upfront cost of spending hundreds of millions of dollars on a new platform or something without the certainty that you're going to be able to sell that gas. So when they looked at that sort of stylized project, they said, well, you know, if you spend all the money up front on the infrastructure but can only drill the wells at 1/4 speed, you have a highly stressed project. So what I started to say before was what something like an Agrium buyer out there could do is give someone the peace of mind to make that investment and know they'll be able to meet the, to be able to supply it, and therefore not have the constrained financials that come from not drilling enough wells.
Yes, follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
Is that what is that what Analytica found?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, they looked at three different scenarios and tried to show how the economics of them worked, and then before and after, being the governor's bill that I was presenting in the House Resources Committee at the time. They were making the case, as I understood it, that to the extent we still need credits in Cook Inlet is to help projects like that, which are constrained on the market side. And my corollary to that is if we could fix their market problems, maybe we don't have to worry about the tax credit problems.
Further questions for Director Alper? Again, thank you very much for being available. Any further discussion or questions for the bill's sponsor? All right, seeing none. Senator Costello, I would look for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 100, Work Order 29-LS0423/Sierra from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill will pass then from committee. We will sign the transmittal documents. While that's being passed around, this concludes our meeting for today. Our next hearing will be on Wednesday, March 23rd. We're going to take up House Bill 137 at that time. This is the hunting and fishing license fees, so that'll be on Wednesday. So we will adjourn at this time. Let the record reflect that it is 4:17 p.m.